is Tennessee Talks with United States Congressman Tim Burchett.
Hello, I'm Congressman Tim Burchett, and welcome back to another episode of Tennessee Talks. Today I'm joined by my very good friend Randy Boyd. As many of you know, he's president of the University of Tennessee, and he's CEO of the Statewide University System. In 1991, he founded Radio Systems Corporation. It says Boyd founded Radio, but that sounds a little formal, so I'm just going to say
Randy
formed it, because I've always known him as Randy. His company produces over 4,000 pet-related products under the brand names PetSafe, Individual Fence, Scoop Free, and Sport Dog. And worldwide, you employed 1,400 people in six different countries. You also own Boyd Sports LLC that owns five Major League Baseball teams, including the Tennessee Smokies, which we're very proud that they are coming home.
Appreciate your help and encourage people accept them back.
I was driving by yesterday, and I was just like, heck yeah, this is going to be awesome. I have people in Congress actually have talked to me about that, buddies of mine that
really?
Played baseball. Yeah, I'm on the congressional baseball team, as you know. I'm third string first baseman.
Yes. I'm coming to watch you play.
You're coming to watch me bench. Yep. I might get in. They said if we get far enough ahead, I'll get in. Last year I got a hit, as you well know.
Yes.
My shoulders are getting sore from carrying the team. I'll just tell you that right now. But no, I told the skipper I'm a confidence builder, because everybody, if they have a terrible day, they say, well, at least I wasn't Burchett. And they'll say, that's correct. It is an important role. You founded a nonprofit to help students attend community college, which is killer, I think. That's outside of all the other. That's what I think is going to, and I'll give you one on that. You served as special advisor on higher education. You served as a commissioner of economic community development, which the state of Tennessee saw untold growth, which was pretty cool. You co-chaired the governor's rural task force and the workforce sub-cabinet. A lot of stuff there. I thank you for coming on my podcast, Randy, and I really appreciate it.
Honored to do it.
I want to talk about your company and how you just came about. You know, a lot of great things, people in Knoxville, and I remember I was on Fox Business or something, and they were talking about entrepreneurship, and I said, well, you know, I know four or five very successful folks that started off very small. I said, you know, Big Jim Haslam started with one filling station. Pete DeBusk, he started out basically just an invention he did in his garage, and he traveled around selling it. Teddy Phillips, they were in charge of cleaning up the World Trade Center. His dad basically started with a pickaxe and a shovel. You, just an old public school educated kid from Knoxville, married a cool girl, went to Bearden High School. Her dad was
his alma mater.
And my alma mater. Her dad was, I feared him, but I loved him just the same. After I got out of, it was kind of cool, because you get out of school and you, I remember I was knocking on doors one time, and I knocked on his door and I got really nervous. You know, I thought he was going to tell me I was late to class. Burchett, where are you supposed to be? You know, but we had an adult conversation, and the role kind of flipped, and him and Miss Oakley were there, and it was pretty cool.
You should have had to knock on his door and ask him for his daughter's hand in marriage.
Oh.
That was intimidating.
No way. That would have been an intimidation.
It actually went over pretty well. I was expecting it.
Okay, well, you were the first member of your family to graduate from college. That's, you know, my mama, youngest of seven, I believe. She had one brother that was killed in the war, but he was a professor, actually. And it was her, youngest of seven, and I think that's cool. And you know, that's one thing. And I'm sorry, I'm digressing. I always remember when I was a kid, and when Daddy was at UT, we'd come to graduation, and you'd always see somebody pull up, and there'd be all the family, and there'd be one like a granddad in his bib overalls, and standing up by the rock getting their picture made, or by the torch usually, and that was pretty cool when I was a kid. And you don't see that as much now, because it's not as rural as we used to be. But being the first one out of your family, that's you know, my family, I guess it was just expected. But anyway, I wonder. You got a lot of young folks out there that watch this podcast, more so than old people our age. If they had an idea, if they were an entrepreneur, what would you tell them to do?
want to touch on a couple of things that you touched on just a moment, and then I'll come answer the question.
Sure.
Because I just got through doing 9 different commencements all across the state of Tennessee. You were wondering what to call me. I'd say 9 out of the 10 students that would actually address me by name would call me Randy. Not President Boyd, another fancy title, which I absolutely, every time they do it, I have this huge smile. I love that. I did have the incredible reward of having at least 3 or 4, as they walked across the stage, say, I'm a UT or a Tennessee Promise graduate. I transferred here. I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for you. It just made it all worthwhile. So being able to give these kids an opportunity, most of them were first generation like me, being able to go to college. So that was incredibly rewarding. But in each one of them, I wasn't the commencement address in each of them, but I get to have the greetings from the system. And I couldn't help myself. The guy that gives the greetings isn't supposed to be giving advice, but I'm old, they're young. And this is what you do at a graduation ceremony, you give advice. So my first bit of advice, which is directly answering your question, was I would say, I want you to go forth and fail. I'm saying, I'm probably the only guy that's going to probably tell you that today, or maybe anytime, but here's why I would say it. You learn more from your success, your failures, than you do from your successes. So you're going to learn a lot from your failures. Everybody that I've ever known that's been successful failed at least somewhere on the way. But it's good to get a failure out of the way early for 2 reasons. One, like me, my first company, I borrowed $5,000 and I lost it in 6 months. The business went out of business.
Wow.
But I didn't really have that far to fall. So if you fail early, you don't have that far to fall. And the second advantage is you get the rest of your life to benefit from it. If you fail late in life, well, then you maybe only got maybe 10, 20 years to benefit from it. But in my case, failing at age 23, I learned a lot about what not to create when it came to new products, and I was able to benefit from that for the next 40 years. So I just encourage if somebody's got an idea, my advice to them is go for it. You're going to have a lot of people that will say, don't do it, and tell you all the reasons why you're going to fail. Just go for it. If you do fail, you're still going to be better off than you were if you didn't try it at all.
Enzo Ferrari, you're a car guy, I'm a car guy. Ferrari always had this thing where he would, he was never the first guy with fuel injection or disc brakes or any of the so-called high-performance stuff. He would let the other guys do it and then wreck and kill their drivers, and he would improve upon it. Yep. And that's sort of the way I approach politics. I always am not the smartest or the best-looking guy in the crowd.
A lot of people do think you're the best-looking guy.
Well, I have the best hair in the business, okay. They tell me. That's what I've been told. And I have the best face for radio, as they used to say. But but the truth is, you just watch everybody else, and if you can learn from their mistakes and don't have to have that pain. But a lot of times it takes that pain. You've got to make that mistake and fall and dust yourself off and get back up.
Yeah, but I'll say on that first business that failed, I created a product called a Storm Alert. It was a barometer alarm system that predicted tornadoes. But nobody was asking for this product. I had the idea, started selling them. Nobody ever asked for it. I found since then that the best way to have a product that's successful is listen very, very carefully to your customers, do exactly what they say, and then present them what they ask for. With the invisible fence, like Ferrari, I suppose, when I came out with mine, I was the 12th one to the market. Invisible fence, the original company, patent expired. I had all kinds of technical challenges. Bet everything I owned, again, on trying to create that one product. And when we created it, 12 other people beat us to the punch. But we did one thing different. Everybody else tried to sell it through franchise dealerships. Sometimes innovation comes from marketing. I didn't know how to do franchise dealerships. I just did what I knew how to do, which was selling it to stores. So I put it in a pretty box with a video to tell you how to install it, and an 800 number in case you had problems. And it worked. So being second to market, but having a product that already has established demand, and then find some other innovation. It doesn't always have to be technical. Sometimes it could be a distribution innovation.
You know, something else that I follow this a lot is on these GoFundMe sites, and kids will come out with a new invention or something, especially out when laser printers or, laser, where you cut stuff out with the laser. I don't know what you call it, but I'm forgetting now, but there'd be a half a dozen of those being funded on there, and they would get funded overnight. And I would see some of the same people buying it, and I always wondered, were they buying their innovation? Because, the computer, everything about it was, they started theirs, Apple and those guys, they started everything in a garage, and incredibly successful. And so, and these are just people that are underfunded, and I followed that through with electric bicycles, and there's several other, I'd get on the early trends and just, I would just like, back when I could invest money, I don't now. I have a Tommy Saller down on Gay Street. He manages my $7,000 portfolio very well right now. Yeah. And my mutual fund, because I have an ethical concern. I don't know if you've caught any of those, our congressman friends. Everybody wants to blast Speaker Pelosi for making 40%. I mean, we had a guy last year made 300% on his stock trades. I mean, and then another, and the second was
like, let him manage mine.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah. And he retired from Congress this year, so last year. Had incredible hair too. I'd always seen him going in the gym every morning, and I never did know that. I should have asked him. I said, "What are your points on this stuff?" But I digress. That's why I can edit all this out. I run on a little bit. Let me ask you another question about the entrepreneur thing. I'm kind of fascinated by this. It's not in my notes, but if somebody had a product that they thought would sell. I have people all the time. Had a guy approach me last week about a product, and he asked me if there's, they always ask for federal money, and I'm always a little hesitant for that because, you know, there was a guy who used to sell a book on the internet, and had question marks all over his suit, and he's like, you know, and he'd say, if you want to do this, there's $1 million for this, you know, and everybody, so then I remember they had called Congressman Duncan's office and say, hey, where can I get some of this money? But if you had an idea, where would you say would be the best way to go about getting people to fund it? And people always, they'll come to me and say, somebody said they'll fund it, but I'll have to give them 51% of my business.
Let me give a couple points on this. First off, just go do it. I don't know how many people I've had in my life. I think anybody that's ever had any product or company that's been successful will have people to do this. They'll come up and say, man, Invisible Fits, what a great idea. I wish I'd had that idea. Ideas are easy. People I have ideas all day long. It's what you do next.
Yeah.
Betting everything you've got to make it happen and then dedicate, in my case, 5 or 6 years, sleeping 3 hours a night, not knowing if you're going to make it or not. Ideas are easy. It's what you do afterwards. So be prepared to do the hard work afterwards. With regards to funding, two things I'll say. One, in my case, we designed the product out of what little cash I had and then went to customers and they made down payments in advance because they were so desperate to get our product. They thought it was such a good value.
Wow.
So finding somebody that actually will benefit or be interested in what you're producing might be a good place to source investment. But there's lots of ways to invest or get investors. You could, I guess today, and this was way before my time, you could do GoFundMe. You could do the normal thing of networking. I had a few friends in Knoxville that took me around to everybody in town that had money. And when it came time to raise money, I raised a little bit of money that way. But here's the important thing. I didn't take my first dollar from an outside investor for 3 years. Now those first 3 years were a struggle. You know, I'm paying vendors late. I'm asking for customers to pay me early, and
sure,
I wouldn't be able to ship on time, and it was just a struggle. But the good news was, by the time I sold my company, I still had 75% of the company. The money that you raise early on is the most expensive capital you'll ever have, and so selling your 51% of the company, you'd be better off taking out a loan and paying 30% interest rate if you believe in your product than selling equity early on. So only take out as much equity or sell as much equity as you need and hold off as long as you absolutely can.
Good advice. It's always, and here what I've been doing lately is somebody will call me and say, hey, you know, a friend or something will say, I'm working on this new product or something, you got any ideas? And I say, here's what I'll do. I'll make a phone call. I'll call somebody that I think maybe would fit. And I say, but I always say, just write it down. I don't want a piece of it. I can't take a piece of it. Nobody from my office will call you asking you for anything. Mm-hmm. What you do with it is yours. So I think a lot of times people always, they just by making the connection, they, and I had a friend who had a great idea and he ended up, paid him a lot of money, but he ended up with, I think, 5% of it. And he gave away portions of it just for, like things you said, just stupid stuff that would have, if he'd had a little more sleep, I don't think he would have made those same decisions. Well,
Can I say this? You know, I had a lot of people early on that bet on me. They either invested in the company or they became joined my board of directors when we didn't deserve to have people of that caliber to be on the board. I always remember Don Johnstone, who was the president of North American Phillips Magnavox, took over from $800 million to $2 billion. And I have a company that's making $18 million in sales and losing money, and he agreed to join my board. I gave him options that, you know, for most intelligent people would say, well, these aren't worth anything and will never be worth anything. But he took options, and I'm happy to say 10 years later when he retired from the board, they were worth millions. So I was really proud that that happened. But I remember asking him, like, why did you join my board? I mean, what made it motivated you to do it? And he said, I just believed in you. I believed in people. And I think that's the case. When you're starting a company and it's early on, regardless of whatever product or idea it is, most smart investors aren't really investing in the technology or the patents. They're investing in the people. They've got to believe in you, in your determination, your passion, more so than the patents or anything else that you might think is valuable.
I'm glad to hear you say that. When I was mayor and we were recruiting businesses in County Mayor, I can remember so many times people would take them, you know, show them all this, you know, it's great that University of Tennessee is here and it's great that Oak Ridge National Laboratory and all these major corporations are focused around here. But the thing that sold them was the people. Mm-hmm. The people that worked at the University of Tennessee, that worked at Oak Ridge National Laboratory, and the folks that were going to work in their factories. I always remember these folks came in, won't mention who it is, but they're very straight-laced folks, very clean-cut, good people, the kind of folks that if your mama was
like us.
Yeah, like us, exactly. They kind of represented this area but weren't from here. And I can always remember the president of the corporation was talking, and you know, I ride motorcycles, and a lot of those guys are a little rough around the edges, good people though, covered in tattoos, long hair, and he was like his foreman on the floor of this factory. And I can remember the guy in the suit was talking to him, and he was asking about his kids, and they were, you know, there was mutual respect. Mm-hmm. And he didn't look at all the extremities. He looked at what was inside, and that is why they brought their company to East Tennessee.
That's
and
awesome. It's great story.
Anyway, I can go on, but let's skip a little bit here. Rural Task Force, Governor's Rural Task Force that you serve on. Those are my folks. I have a lot of rural counties and even folks that I don't represent, think I represent them. So tell me a little bit about your work on there.
Yeah, so when I became the Commissioner for Economic and Community Development, it didn't take me very long, probably in the first week, to realize that if I tried to somehow slow down growth and businesses moving into Nashville, I get run over. Nashville didn't need my help. I mean, we could be there and be an assistant, but Nashville didn't need our help. But at the exact same time, our communities and our rural communities were really struggling. You look in the state of Tennessee, Williamson County is one of the richest counties in the country. 70% post-secondary attainment, college going rate of 70%+. But just 40 miles south, you're in Grundy County with 33% poverty rate, one of the poorest 10% of the counties in the country. And so we just had this great disparity. So the idea behind, I used to always say, we're only as rich as our poorest neighbor, and we have a lot of poor neighbors. And so we put a lot of efforts around trying to figure out how we could help support those rural communities. And each one was different. There was, like, I won't go through the whole strategy, but there was six different ways in which we could help, you know, from tourism to agriculture, sometimes to industrial sites. But not everybody's going to need a factory. You know, if you're in Hancock County, you can't put a factory up there because there's no good roads in there. So there, the answer was a call center. Grundy County, the answer was tourism and helping build their technical workforce. But every county had a different strategy. But we worked together across the state, from Department of Agriculture to tourism to Department of Education, Department of Labor, all was working together to help solve the problem. And I think that was the other big part of the Governor's Rural Task Force. Not only identifying a problem, but pulling everybody together that had resources that could help solve the problem.
Okay. Excellent. Because I tell you, the rural community, they make up our country. I mean, we always look at the corporate folks as run the show, but when it gets down to it, it's a lot of these working class folks that really make it happen. This is the one last question. Okay. It's not on my list again, but you're a car guy like me. What's the one car you wish you had that you don't have?
Oh, well, that's an easy one. It's an Aston Martin DB4.
Four.
It's the one that James Bond had in Casino Royale, his first car.
I remember that. Yeah. One. You know, it's, there's a story about Aston Martin. It was government owned, and Ford bought it. You know, and you know the story on that. They bought it just for their design center, which is crazy. But a guy went to him and said, "Hey, if you'll sell me one at cost, I'll take it." So he gets it, and it's, you know, 20% more than what is on the showroom. And they say, "Well, how's this?" Because England would subsidize everyone back in the day, you know.
But
they built a beautiful car. Man, there used to be one. I lusted after it at the up in Gatlinburg. It was the James Bond car, and they probably paid $2,000 for it or something, you know. It's, you know, some of the original Shelby coupes that raced at Le Mans, as they say. Carroll Shelby said they contemplated just throwing them off into the ocean because they were just beat up old race cars. You know, can you imagine? Wow. Can't imagine. But anyway, this is the worst part about this show that I dislike, but our guests always like. You get to ask me any question you want, anything.
Well, so I know you're a big fan of Bigfoot. I'm building a new baseball stadium. We're looking for entertainment. What do I need to do to get the Bigfoot National Conference at the Smokies new stadium?
I actually, I could make that. I've been wanting to do that here because it's a huge. Somebody said, "What do you call?" I asked him, "What do you call a bunch of Bigfoot folks in your park?" And I said, "Tourists." I mean, they spend the money. When we did the Bigfoot show here, five states were here. People from five states just came to see them. The people. I will make that happen. I'll call a couple folks I know that are in that. I don't ever get to go to it, and they usually have it in Townsend, and that's in my district, just because something's always scheduled. But that'd be huge.
Yeah.
That would be huge.
Let's do it.
Yeah,
we're thinking about different acts, maybe Paul McCartney, Morgan Wallen. But if we can,
if you got a Bigfoot,
if we can get Bigfoot, we'll make them wait.
I think they can wait. They can wait. Randy, I want to thank you so much for joining me. Obligatory fist bump. Thank you for work you do at the university. We didn't talk really anything about the university, but that's all out there. I wanted to talk about the cool stuff that I think some of our young folks would really be into and would dig. So thank you, and I've enjoyed having you on the show. This was actually one I'm going to go back and watch a couple of times, and I'll make sure I got straight what you said about the entrepreneur stuff, because that was really cool.
Awesome. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, brother. And I want to thank everybody. I'm Tim Burchett, and thank you all for listening to another episode of Tennessee Talk. Almost said Tim's Talk. That's somebody else. I violate a copyright on that, but this is Tennessee Talks, and thank y'all so much for reviewing and listening, and as always, thank y'all for sending me here.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Tennessee Talks. Please subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Keep up with Congressman Burchett by following Rep. Tim Burchett on Twitter and Instagram, and Congressman Tim Burchett on Facebook and YouTube.